Today's Teisho is on case 46. Proceed on from the top of the pole. Case 46 in the Wumongkan. Proceed on from the top of the pole. Sekiso Osho asked, how can you proceed on further from the top of a 100-foot pole? Another eminent teacher of old said, you who sit on the top of a 100-foot pole, although you have entered the way, you are not yet genuine. Proceed on from the top of the pole, and you will be, you will show your whole body in the 10 directions. Mumon's comment, if you go on further and turn your body about, no place is left where you are not the master. Even so, tell me, how will you go on further from the top of the 100-foot pole, eh? Mumon's verse, he darkens the third eye of insight and clings to the first mark on the scale. Even though he may sacrifice his life, he is only a blind man leading the blind. Well, today is the last day of our autumn 2009 session. And I want to thank everybody for doing such an excellent job. The sitting here was really quite excellent this morning. Earlier in the week, I was talking to people who were here for the whole 5 days. And everybody who was here for the whole 5 days is pretty experienced. So in each of the mornings of the first 3 days, people just sat very still. It was really impressive. But these last 2 days have been equally impressive. People have been sitting very, very still. And so it was really it's a wonderful experience to practice with people who are sitting so wholeheartedly. I have been very happy in Dokusan too. Everybody's doing just an excellent job. People are working very hard. Somebody came into Dokusan last night who is relatively new to Zen, and told me that this person told me that every other sit was now a full lotus, and I was stunned. I thought, oh my gosh, that's great. You know, I wasn't. You know, so people are really doing a beautiful job. I'm very glad that people were able to fit this into their schedules. You know, we have many people have very demanding schedules, and at times in our lives they can be extraordinarily demanding. You know, I realized that it's not always possible to come to Sesshin at all, and it's not always possible to come for 5 days. And so I'm very glad you were able to come for the weekend. That's really great. I hope you had you were able to enter deep samadhi and be in the moment, you know. We have a very, very intensive culture, right? It's like, you know, I think at other times people have had a different sense of how to live, for sure, you know. In agricultural societies, you know, people don't have to work so hard 12 months out of the year. I mean, it's true we're not breaking rocks or we're not cutting wheat all day. But I was reading something some time ago about how in Europe, until quite recently, until the Industrial Revolution, winter was like really like the whole of winter was sort of like downtime. You know? Now people had a lot of problems. They had diseases. They would have occasional famines. You know, but often people just got a lot of sleep during the winter. You know, they wouldn't have much to do. They'd just sort of hang, you know, to have small maintenance tasks on their farm and things. And then when, you know, summer was intense. You know, you really had to work hard. But apparently people used to sleep, you know, very long periods, like 12 hours a day and even longer, you know, and there wasn't much to do, you know, there was no TV, there was no videos, and so apparently there was no light, no electric lights. So people got a lot of sack time, you know. We live in like a totally different society. It's extremely, extremely demanding, you know. People get up very early. If they want to do zazen in the morning, they have to get up very early. And then you go off to work, and often work is very demanding, very hectic. And there's always an element of pressure, you know. You know, it's like pressure, and there's a lot of you know, things going on all at once. You know, you have a meeting at 10, you're working on your project, and you get interrupted so you can go to the meeting, you come back, and this goes on and on. You know, at the end of the day, you might get home, you might not get home until 7 or 8, and you get have a meal, maybe you watch some television or something. And then you go to sleep, and it's like the next day you start all over again. And after a while, this gets to be rather wearing, right? And especially now, because, you know, there's a climate of economic insecurity and general insecurity, I think. So, you know, people can feel very trapped in this situation. And when people feel trapped, they can't really be very creative, you know. I think something like zazen is very, very good medicine. You know, very good. People need to take time to enjoy their lives. And there's different ways of doing that. You know, one way is to go on a vacation. And that's lovely. You know, you can go to a beautiful place and relax. And then when you come back, you'll be a little bit better prepared for your stresses at work. However, you know, I think sesshin is even better than a vacation. If you tell people about sesshin, they might not understand, right? Somebody was telling me that there's a very beautiful retreat center in, this person went to a hospice program, a Buddhist chaplain hospice program. And it was run by a group of Zen people. They were sponsoring some kind of a get-together, like a sesshin type thing. And it was going to be held at this beautiful place up in New England. And apparently there's like, you know, meals, catered meals, and all of this stuff. And this person told me that she said, remember you used to say, you used to make fun of how we could all get together and sit in a circle, right? You know, we could have a sesshin where, you know, if you say I'm going away for a retreat, right? I'm going away for a retreat. People think, oh, how lovely. You know, you'll get up around 7 and there'll be a tray of blueberry muffins and different, you know, coffees, and you'll have that and you'll sit and reflect, and then we'll have a dinner, breakfast, and then we'll all get in a circle, right? And we'll talk about Zen, right? And this person told me, you know, actually that's what they do up there. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know. That I'm sure that's very restorative for people. I'm sure they feel very restored. And it's a big mistake to think Zen is about, you know, being tough or, you know. I mean, I just don't think that's the point of Zen. It's not about. This is not about like an endurance. We're not testing your endurance. It's like, we'll make sesshin so rough that when you get back to your job, it'll feel good. Thank God I'm back in the on the treadmill again. That terrible sesshin. You know. I'm out of pain at least. You know? This is heaven compared to that pain in my life all day. So that's not the object of Zen, and it, nor should it ever be. You know, the object of Zen. But however, you know, the object of Zen is like is deeper than, you know, getting up at 7 and having blueberry muffins and sitting in a circle. At least I think so, because you know, we're really encountering the world in a deeper way. You know. It's the point of sitting for so long is not to make our legs hurt primarily, but to have a really deep experience of being in the moment. It's like ordinary life. People are very rarely stay put in the moment for very long. You know, they're going. We're in a future oriented mode, all day long, day after day, week after week. And when we get off the future-oriented mode on the weekends, where we sort of recover and, you know, knock around aimlessly on the weekend or do some chores around the house, this experience of Zen is like all of a sudden we just stop, you know, come to Sesshin. And there's a part of you that says, okay, keep going. And like for the first day, you're still lurching forward. You know, it's like your gears are still turning, you know. And then it's like the clutch is out now. So you're revving your gears, but your car isn't going anywhere. But around day two, you know, people begin to get more calm. And they begin to realize that the moment is not this very fleeting thing. It's very spacious, you know. It's very spacious and inviting, actually. You know, takes a little bit of zazen to do this usually, but every once in a while, even if you're a beginner, you'll stumble into these moments that are really like eternal moments. You know, it's like, you know, all of a sudden you'll just be staring at some leaves on the ground, and you'll be. It's like every atom of your being is relaxed, and it's sort of like a timeless experience. You know, it's just your words are not arising. You know, you're not thinking about the future. You're not thinking about the past. Your consciousness is just resting serenely in the moment. And this is usually people experience this. It's quite beautiful. You know, quite wonderful. And actually, I think people sometimes remember those events for long periods of time. You know, I actually think that they become part of our of who we are. You know, very much so. You know, it's like I can remember when I was in college, I had to work construction in the summer to help pay for the cost of college. And I was standing by, my friend Larry Sullivan used to drive me to our workplace. I helped him get a job on this workplace. And his parents let him drive their, I think they had like a, they had like a big car. It was like a Lincoln Continental or something. It was ridiculous. It was like a Cadillac or something. You know, it's this giant American car, and his parents, his dad would I guess take a carpool or take the maybe the bus into town. He worked for the federal government. Larry's dad. So he was within striking distance of his job, so he let his son take their big fat car, and Larry would come down the road and pick me up. If you know Northern Virginia, we would drive by the Tyson's Corners mall, and we would drive out to a place called Reston, Virginia, where we were working construction. But anyway, I remember sitting there one morning waiting for him to show up. And I looked down, and there were these blue flowers growing out of a crack in the cement. And these are actually called chicory flowers. They're a wild flower. They have a little powder blue flower. And they grow all over Northern Virginia in the summer. By the late summer, there are these little blue flowers. They're quite beautiful, you know. And it was growing out of a crack in the sidewalk. And I looked at it, and I was just sort of like transfixed. And I was just really like transfixed by this beautiful flower. And I have never forgotten that. You know, it's one of those moments. I mean, why haven't I forgotten it? It stuck with me ever since. It's an utterly trivial matter, but I can remember other moments like that too. Once when I got to college, somebody said, let's go up to the hill where the observatory was. Somebody in my dorm said, let's go up to the observatory. And so we all walked up to the hill where the campus observatory was. And then the observatory was closed, but we all sat there lying on the grass, and there was a full moon, or a nearly full moon, and the clouds were blowing by. And we just lay there looking at this, and you know, I can remember that, I don't know, 37 years later, right? More than that. So how come I remember that, but I don't remember, other things? I think, of course, I do remember being stressed too, you know. So I remember other things as well. But why those moments? Because it's easy to see why I remember, you know, being stressed, right? Something was troubling me, you know. I can remember being very stressed when I got to Rutgers, for example. You know? But I don't remember, you know, why do I remember these moments, you know? Because I wasn't stressed, there wasn't any emergency. There, you know, from a certain standpoint, you could say they're just totally trivial, you know. But actually, that beautiful moment, those beautiful moments linger in my mind even now, because there was just something about them that made me feel more whole and alive and awake. And in Zen too. Sometimes during a sesshin, you begin to have this feeling. It's like the barriers go down a little bit, and you begin to be in the moment for longer periods of time, and your mind is not always revving forward. And when you're in these moments, you can feel this deep sense of peace and well-being. And it's almost like timeless, right? It's like this deep sense of peace and well-being. And those moments are really quite lovely and important, I think, and sustaining, you know. It could be possible to have this in a busy day. You could just close the door of your office and watch your breath a little bit, but it's generally very difficult. But when it happens, it's so beautiful, you know. So I mean, one way to think about Zen is this is like opportunity to cultivate a different part of our life, you know. There's this aspect which is always going forward, 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 forward. And then there's this other aspect which is just resting serenely in the moment. And I think that resting serenely in the moment is an important part of life. You know, it's not appreciated by our culture. I was reading this sociologist who was saying that his name is Anthony Giddens, if you're interested in sociology. And he was talking about how in the modern world we do what he calls, we colonize the future. So this means we make plans far into the future. Right? We're sort of like, he said, like the Chinese right now, he doesn't talk about this, but a good example would be like the Chinese right now are buying up all of these oil leases in Africa. And they're planning 50 years down the road, right? And so this is an example of what, and Giddens says we all do this, you know. Some people are very smart about this, you know. They buy a piece of property and then 50 years later it's worth 20 times what they paid for it, you know. So colonizing the future is a big part of the modern life. You know, in the old days, people didn't live that way. You know, they just lived from day to day. But that's very difficult now in the modern world. People don't necessarily... It's very hard to take it one day at a time, actually. You're under a lot of pressure to colonize the future. But it's important to realize that the future is quite unknowable, you know, and you can't really control it. So, you know, the Chinese have bought all those oil leases, but in 50 years, oil might be absolutely useless, you know. Nobody might want it. It's possible that they will have bought all those leases and it turns out not to have been a good deal, you know. I'm not saying people shouldn't plan ahead, but we probably put too much emphasis on the future and not enough emphasis on the moment, you know. So one way to think about Zen is this is like developing the other half of ourselves in our lives. We come here and we can dwell calmly in the moment and appreciate life, I think, in a very different way. And I actually think it's a deeper way, you know. Now, a lot can be done in that fast-paced world, right? You know, a lot can be achieved. But I often think that people do their best thinking and their best... They live their best thinking, their most creative, when they're not pressured too much. Now, there are people who can produce under pressure, I know. But I think that it's a good idea for people to be in the moment. And sometimes you find you can be very creative if you're not too worried about an outcome, you know. I mean, somebody was telling me this the other day that they do a test. There's a psychology experiment that goes like this. They give people a box, and in the box there's some tacks, and there's a candle, and I can't remember what else. A lighter, I guess. And they're told. What are they told? We want you to attach the candle to the wall. I think that's what they're told. We want you to somehow attach this candle to the wall. And the thing is that if people have a very tight time deadline, they can't solve the problem very well. But if they have more time, if there isn't really a time deadline, they figure it out. Basically what you can do is you can take the, you know, he said people try all kinds of things, right? They try to light the candle and put some wax on the wall to stick the candle on the wax, right? They try to think about how they could attach the candle with the tacks and so on. But the answer is you take the box, you take the tacks, you use the tacks to hold the box to the wall, right? Mm-hmm. And then you put the candle in the box. Ta-da! Okay. By the way, I got it right away. I did. And he said, oh, I should have known better. But I did. I got it. He was like, of course. You know. But the thing was, I wasn't pressured, right? I wasn't pressured. And the presence of pressure doesn't necessarily make us better. Being able to just think, let the mind go, and be a little bit free of constraint, and a little bit free of fear, allows us to be more creative, you know, I think. So making a place for this in your life could be very helpful in lots of ways, you know. When you think, oh my God, I've got to have the answer, it's very unlikely. You're just going to choke up, you know. But when you have some time to let the mind unfold, there's a kind of natural harmony to your thinking processes or your your life process is, it can be very helpful to you. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't do your studies. You know, I'm not saying don't. But I am saying it would be very helpful to be able to let the mind be free to work through these problems without any sense of urgency, you know. And so, you know, Zen is a really wonderful opportunity, first of all, to just get a little bit of therapy, right, for a difficult life. But it's also a wonderful opportunity to learn, I think, how to live in a more creative way. And that means being able to trust in the intuitive processes, you know, a little bit. And so, you know, this is good training for the busy life, you know, but it's also therapy. So, what does this have to do with being on a pole? Well, I mean, the thing is, there's two aspects to this koan. You know, one aspect is like the pure Zen aspect of the koan. People can practice Zen for a long time, and their mind becomes very still, but not like totally still. And people can be a little bit nervous about letting the mind become totally still. Because people get frightened when they're not thinking, you know. So if you do enough zazen, it's the mind is like going bump 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 bump, and if you begin to do a lot of zazen, the mind starts going bump 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 bump, and then at some point it just stops, and that's daikensho when that happens. But people can be very, unconsciously, they're fearful. And they can be very nervous, so they come to session, bump, 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 and then day two is bump, 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 day three is bump, 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 day four is bump, bump, bump. Then they get afraid, bump, 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 bump. Bump, bump. Bum, 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 bum. Bum. But eventually it just stops, right? So this koan, one way to understand the koan is aimed at people who are like, you know, the people who are in that category of, you know, where it's almost stopped, but they're scared, right? But there's another aspect to this koan too, which would be like this. I mean, life is full of transitions, you know, and they can be very difficult, very difficult. Life is filled with transitions. It's like every moment is really a transition, you know. And we're always going from our old life into our new life. And so this is like constant, you know. And it's scary. It's a little bit scary, you know, very scary. And yet, if you practice Zen, you have this deeper sense of connectedness or this bigger perspective, you know. And you develop a kind of stability in the midst of change. It's a kind of calm in the midst of change. If you spend a lot of time in this big mind consciousness, this slow mind, this deeply connected moment by moment mind, you know. It's easier to deal with the transitions, you know. They're not as scary, and you can go through them with a kind of a deep calm. I don't know if we'll ever have a temple of our own. It might never happen, and that's perfectly okay, you know. But if it ever does happen, I've often thought I would love to call the temple something like the temple of this is too corny, but something like, you know, this isn't right, but this idea, you know, the idea of unshakable calm, that wouldn't work, but something like that, you know, something like abiding calm, you know, the temple of abiding calm, you know. There's this kind of calm that's always there, the abiding calm, and it's there, you know. That would be cool, I think. But anyway, we're in the temple of abiding calm right now, and it's a beautiful place to be, isn't it? You know. And you're going to get in your car at 6 o'clock, which will really be 5, you know, or a little after that. We'll end at 6, and then, you know, we'll talk and we'll take photographs and everything. But, you know, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, which will really be 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. You'll get in your car and drive away and go back to your job, you know. And it could feel a little bit like jumping off of a pole, you know. But if you do enough zazen, generally speaking, those transitions become much easier, you know. Because you have like a deeper sense of trust. Now, it's not always possible to have though, and if you don't have it, don't blame yourself, you know. I used to come in to see Genki Roshi and I would say, I just don't think I can do this, you know, and he would say, trust yourself. And I would go, but, you know, I'm a screw up, how can I trust myself, you know, and he meant trust your big self, you know, trust your big self. And he meant put your trust in the mind that doesn't move, the immovable, abiding, calm mind, you know. And that does help quite a bit, you know. So I hope you have experienced that deep, abiding calm here. And it's delicious, isn't it? It's a great pity our culture is so out of balance. You know, it's just so out of balance. I'll wrap it up, but, you know, I'm so happy there's a movement called the slow food movement. You've probably heard of it, but, you know, they really hate fast food. They want to encourage people to eat like meals, you know, where, you know, you might spend 2 hours. In some places in the world, it's still done. Like in Europe, it's disappearing from Europe. The American lifestyle has hit Europe, so they go to McDonald's too. But traditionally, you know, people would get work for 4 or 5 hours, and then they'd have a meal, and the meal would be like 2 hours long, you know, and they might even have like a nap after the meal. And this is quite common, especially in Southern Europe. People used to, you know, you'd work a pretty long day, then you'd have this 2-hour meal and maybe a nap, and then you'd get up and you go back. You might work till 11 at night, but your work day is a long day, but you have this big meal in the middle, and it's with other people, and you get to talk, and that's a very different way to structure your time, you know. And I think it's quite beautiful, really. You know, it really puts at the heart of the day a slower time and a chance to be in the moment, you know. I just think that's very wise. You know, that's like a really wise culture. And so it's encouraging, you know. The slow food movement has actually taken root. You know, they have some books and they sell well. And there's actually a slow money movement now too, where instead of trying to get maximum return, you invest in things that are likely to be long lasting, you know. So less dramatic return, but long, you know, and you're investing in things like solar energy. So you're taking the long view, right? It's like, rather than trying to cash out in a year, I'm investing in, you know, I have a longer horizon. I read this thing I read something, I can't remember where I saw it, but it was so interesting. They said that at Oxford University, there was a room that had big oak beams holding up the ceiling. It was a giant room. And those big oak beams were holding up the ceiling, but after like 500 years, they were rotting out and they had to be replaced. And the people in charge said, where will we ever find pieces of oak this big? And they found that the people who had built the room had actually planted an oak forest. Isn't that interesting? Just for this eventuality. So they had planned ahead, but so they found the deed, or they found the documents, and it said, go over here, we planted these trees, and there they were. So they cut them down, and put them up, and they put new trees in, right? So I think that's such a wise way to live, right? It's a totally different way to live, right? It's like slow time, right? It's long time. And of course, different societies have different views of time. You know, ours is like hysterical almost. You know? But at any rate, when we come to Sesshin, we don't have to be so hysterical. And so I'm very glad if you experience the moment in its wonderful, calm connectedness. And I really look forward to our next chance to practice together. I'm really looking forward to that. Even though I know it might be a long time in some cases because you've got a lot on your plates, please don't ever feel anxious. I understand that life is full of challenges. Me too, I have challenges too. And so sometimes you can't get it all in, and that doesn't mean you're not serious about your practice, it just means you're trying to stay ahead of all these events, you know. So please, we have a number of hours left in the day for this beautiful practice together, and then the day will be over, and we'll be back to our lives. And you can, I hope you'll be able to handle the transition very smoothly, very easily, and it won't be too jolting for you. Yeah. So. Mumon's Sekiso Osho said, how can you proceed on further from the top of the 100-foot pole? Another eminent teacher of old said, you who sit on the top of the 100-foot pole, although you have entered the way, you are not yet genuine. A genuine person would trust, right? Proceed on from the top of the pole, and you will show your whole body in the 10 directions. So we feel afraid when we're disconnected. But when we feel a deeper sense of connection, we're not afraid, you know. So the way to find that connection is just to be in the moment. Mumon's comment, if you go on further and turn your body about, no place is left where you are not the master. But even so, tell me, how will you go on further from the top of the 100-foot pole, eh? Mumon's verse, he darkens the third eye of insight and clings to the first mark on the scale. In other words, he gave a good answer. Even though he may sacrifice his life, he is only a blind man leading the blind. In other words, he's giving good advice, okay?